if we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
France Authority on AM 1420. The answer.
10 minutes after 10 o'clock, hour number two is underway on AM 1420. The answer. Thanks for being with us. It is a Wednesday that is the morning after and the morning of two very important events in this country and in its history and in its future to come. We'll discuss why. It's the sixth morning of the first month of the year of our Lord 2021. Last night, our nation took a huge hit. Last night, the people of Georgia failed to come through in sufficient numbers, if you believe that the election was on the up and up. They failed to come through in sufficient numbers to protect this republic from a socialist takeover. That's the period, point blank, bottom line issue here. They failed to stop a takeover. Now, it doesn't mean it's all their fault, because there are obviously 50 senators, Democrat senators, in states around this country that have led to this split, which of course would, if Ossoff is asserted to be the winner, and Warnock, of course, has already been called the winner in the race against David Perdue, Kamala Harris, the vice president and president of the Senate, would be the deciding vote in any 50-50 split. So that's where we are right now. It is Georgia that kind of put it over the top. Doesn't mean they're the only ones to blame in this situation, but it is what it is. The morning, that's the morning after part. The morning of part, as I started the show with today, is that it's the morning of a massive fight in Washington, D.C. It's a fight that is going to be fought on Capitol Hill in the House and in the Senate, certifying the electors and certifying the election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as the incoming president and president, vice president-elect of the United States. They're going to fight on the House floor, as Jim Jordan told us on Monday, over states that changed their rules, state legislatures which totally ignored their own election laws, which is unconstitutional, in order to favor more votes coming in for a particular party. And obviously in these cases, in these battleground states, we're talking about Joe Biden. In the Senate, they are fighting to decertify some of the states, or at least to not certify some of the states' electors in the states in which fraud has been committed, or at least is alleged to have been committed, and evidence which points that way. We have not been allowed to hear that evidence in courts of law. We have not been allowed to hear that evidence on television, because the mainstream media simply will not cover it any more than they would cover the boatloads of evidence against Hunter Biden and Jim Biden and Joe Biden as it pertained to Tony Bobulinski and all of their nefarious overseas deals and enrichment on the Biden name with access to the Biden vice presidency and the Obama presidency. They bury these stories so we can't find the information out. And as it pertains to this election, we can't hear the evidence. They won't cover that either. So we'll have to hear it on the floor of Congress and on the floor of the Senate today as well. So Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, and others are fighting very, very hard to demand a 10-day commission be appointed to conduct full investigations into the allegations of fraud in these various states, battleground states, that have led to Joe Biden being the presumptive president-elect. And that's exactly what must happen. So we are the other part of the fight in D.C. is happening on the streets. Busloads of people are coming to D.C. right now at this hour and have already arrived from states all over the country. There's going to be hundreds of thousands of people there. Now, the media will tell you there were 70, but you're going to look at aerial photographs, and you're going to see just masses of people in Washington, D.C. to hear President Trump speak kind of on the sidelines of the congressional fight, because he will be addressing the crowds in D.C. at 11 o'clock. And now I want to follow through, and I think I just heard that our guest is on the line. So let's go ahead and go to Washington, D.C. right now, site of this massive Stop the Steal rally. President Trump is scheduled to address in about 45 minutes. Our friend Tom Zawistowski from the Portage County Tea Party, from the We the People Convention, is in D.C. helping to fight that fight. Joining us now on AM 1420, The Answer. Tom Z, how are you, sir?
I'm well, Bob. Can you hear me okay? I'm sorry, there's a lot of people around me here. Can you hear me?
I know there are, and I know this might be. Yeah, I hear you just fine, Tom. Okay. And I know it's going to be a little tough because you've got a lot of people there, and that's exactly what I wanted to hear from you. Kind of give us a scene setter there, Tom Z. What are you seeing? What are you hearing right now?
Okay, so I'm right at the base of the Washington Monument, looking north at the White House, and so I can see, you know, the crowd that's down by the ellipse where the president is going to be speaking. And I would say right now there's probably a couple hundred thousand people from what I can see looking to my left and to my right. And there's starting to have some warm-up speakers, and you know, there's been a lot of chanting and things, but the crowd is still growing. There's lots of buses dropping people off.
Tom, what's the goal? What brought you to Washington today? What brought these hundreds of thousands of people to Washington today? What is the goal at the end of it all?
Well, I think the bottom line is that the American people need to show up and show that we actually care about what they do today, that, you know, we're not just going to, you know, step back and say, well, you know, I'm too busy, you know, with my personal life. I don't care about what happens to the country. So these people are here to show support for the president, and they're here to say to, you know, to Congress that you need to do your duty. You need to make sure that we have free and fair elections, because if we don't have free and fair elections, we don't have a republic. And so we aren't, it's about electing Donald Trump. This is about restoring our faith in our elections and making sure that we have a representative republic instead of thugocracy.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, I've been saying the exact same thing. This is much bigger than Donald Trump. As much as it is unfair that Donald Trump would have an election stolen from him, with all of the different pieces of evidence and examples of evidence that we have heard that the courts refuse to hear, it is terrible what's being done to Donald Trump. But it is bigger than that. This is about the next election. This is about the next, the midterm elections in 2022 as well. If the Democrats find that they are able to be successful in stealing a national presidential election, then why on earth would they not carry that on into Senate elections and House elections 2 years from now, knowing that this works? And then, you know, the entirety of America has no faith whatsoever in the electoral system.
Yeah, and Bob, I think that's exactly what you saw last night in Georgia. I mean, if you don't fix it, what do you expect? A different result, right? I mean, the bottom line is you can't tell me that that many people in Georgia voted for people like Ossoff and the other guy who are just outright communists. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Libertarian or whatever. You know, you want to have your own freedom and your prosperity. So this is much bigger than what's happening right now. And what's interesting, Bob, is the Tea Party movement, as you know, when we started 11 years ago, you know, it was more theoretical, right? It was about, debt, and it was about, future issues when you do this environmental regulations and how it would cripple us. But it didn't affect people immediately. What's happened with COVID is everything the Tea Party said for 11 years has become real. It's now, it's not theory, it's a fact. You're hurting my business. They're seeing what tyranny really is. And that's what we're headed for, folks. You're headed for tyranny, where, you know, Joe Biden and Joe Biden's not doing anything, that the leftists, you know, really guided by the communist Chinese, are going to literally be taking all of our rights away and just destroying our country. And if we don't stand right now and fight it and keep fighting it from here on in, that's exactly what's going to happen. Freedom's not free. You got to fight for it.
You know, Tom, we're talking to Tom Zawistowski of the We the People Convention and also the Portage County Tea Party. Everything you just said right now was spot on. The cynic in me, though, wonders how we engage in a fight that has been called already. What I mean by that is, because of what you just described, you're spot on when you called Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff communists, particularly Warnock. But, if they have control of the Senate, which they will, and they already have the House, and they will have the Harris-Biden administration in that order in the White House, it seems like the fight is over. Because if they go ahead and do what they said they were going to do, two new states, get rid of the legislative filibuster, get rid of the Electoral College, it appears, Tom, as though it's over. We can't fight anymore because there's nothing left to fight. You know, no one left to fight. They have an extraordinary unanimous hold on federal power and will vote to keep it that way. So that's the cynic in me says, hey, I'm up for the fight too, but who's left to fight if the ring is empty because they've already won and gone home?
Right. So, you know, both you and I, Bob, have sports backgrounds, and we understand, you know, how you win. You have to have the will to win, even when you're down, even when you don't, you know, look like you have a chance. You got to believe you have a chance. So let me give this analogy. It reverses the situation. Say this is Kamala Harris is the vice president today, and it's the second term of Joe Biden, and she has to decide what to do today. Do you think she would hesitate for a second to just say we're throwing out all these contested state electors? Because they have the will to win. They will do what it takes to win. Mike Pence, who is a very devout Christian, needs to know and does know that these people will kill children after they're born and call it abortion. If you're a Christian and you're Mike Pence, you need to stand up today and say, this shall not pass. It is not about the rule of law. They don't give a damn about the law, Bob. These people are cheating about everything. So it's time for us to figure this out. We're in a fight. In a fight, you got to do what it takes to win. Mike Pence, President Trump need to do whatever it takes to protect and defend our republic. It's that simple. Have the will to win. We got the controls. We can win. If you're holding the gavel, you should win.
Tom Z, before you go, can you educate us to the best of your knowledge on what power the vice president does have here in that regard? Because there have been competing stories. Some have said that Vice President Pence told President Trump he doesn't have the power to do what Trump wants him to do. Others have said, no, he absolutely does. What can the vice president do as it pertains to the certification of this election?
Bob, that's my point. He can do whatever the hell he wants. Do you think the left, you know, asked whether they can do it? You think they care what the law says? We're in a lawless society. It's the will to win, Bob. So I don't care what the... No one even knows. They've never been there. So you know what Mike Pence can do? You know what Donald Trump can do? They can do whatever the hell they want. And I'm saying they've got to do what it takes to win, to save our nation. Come on. This isn't tiddlywink. You're fighting for the freedom of the world. And I ran a full-page ad in the Washington Times talking about the Vietnam vets and the Korean vets and how you sent our kids to North Korea and to Vietnam to die fighting the communist Chinese. But Rob Portman not going to raise his hand and say, no, we're not going to let Joe Biden be president until we investigate his Chinese connections? You're just going to turn our country over to the communist Chinese when 100,000 of us died fighting them? The will to win, Bob. It's not a game. Stand up and defend America. Declare martial law tomorrow if they don't do this.
It is absolutely not a game, but Rob Portman and many other spineless Republicans are not going to do what it takes to win this, or at the very least to get this commission established to investigate and audit all of the states in which irregularities and fraud has been found, Tom Z. And that's the problem. Only 13 senators, to my understanding, are rising up to do that. That means, what, about 39 of them are more like Portman, spineless and not willing to, I'm talking about Republican senators, and not willing to do what is necessary to restore our faith in the electoral process here, that the election integrity is actually still going to be held.
There was a large tell last night that you saw, Bob, and I don't know if you talked about it on your show already, but when you saw AFP, Americans Quote Unquote for Prosperity, and their Koch network come out and endorse this, you know, that the Senate should should confirm the electoral votes for Joe Biden. That was the big money people who buy Rob Portman's seat, who buy all those Republican seats. That was the message to the Republicans that they elect with their big money that they want Joe Biden. Okay? So don't expect anything out of Rob Portman. He's bought and paid for. He was bought and paid for decades ago. Okay? So it's real simple. Donald Trump and Mike Pence and the rest of the Patriots who are still here, they just have to do what they can do with the power they've got. And that's why 2 million people are going to be here today saying, we will support you because we understand the stakes. So screw Rob Portman. I don't care what Rob Portman does. We need to do what we got to do to win, Bob. It's that simple.
Tom Zawistowski in Washington, D.C., joining a lot of other fighters, hundreds of thousands of them expected in D.C. today to put pressure on the Republicans and others on Capitol Hill to indeed not certify this election result until it can be proven that it was conducted fairly and impartially, which, of course, most of us know that it has not. Tom, thank you for the update from D.C. Thank you for being there, and keep up the good fight. Keep us posted.
I will, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. Tom Zawistowski, Portage County Tea Party, and again, the We the People Convention. All right, it's 24. We're a little late. We'll come back right after this on AM 1420, The Answer. All right, it's 10:27 as we continue on AM 1420. The Answer. We are guest-free the rest of the way. I know a lot of people have been on hold who had to hang up. You can dial back at 216-901-0945. We'll put you on right after the bottom of the hour news. 216-901-0945. I get accused of reading that number too fast sometimes. Save it in your phone. Then you don't have to worry about finding it. Save it. Just put Bob on your phone and save 216-901-0945 or 888-281-1110. We'll put you up on the radio. I just I was getting a text message from a friend during the last half hour, a couple of text messages blaming Donald Trump for all of this, blaming Donald Trump for the loss in Georgia, blaming Donald Trump for the Democrats' unchecked power now, blaming Donald Trump for Joe Biden, et cetera, et cetera. And indeed, I'm looking at a news story from Mediaite, who says, or that says, conservatives blame Trump as early Georgia numbers look grim for Republicans. Thanks a lot, Donald. Thanks to Donald Trump, my friend said in his tweet, the party of Reagan is dead. And I got to tell you, I'm going to stand up here for the presidency of Donald Trump. We are in a much better place now, even though we are going to be moving from conservative, constitutionally principled government under Trump to far-left socialist government incoming under Harris and Biden and, you know, Schumer and Pelosi and Ornoff or Ossoff, I should say, and Warnock. I just combined Warnock and Ossoff and called him Ornoff. That's fine. But Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff and AOC and the rest, we're still in a far better place than we would have been had it not been for Donald Trump. Because I fought on these airwaves 4 years ago during the Republican primary, or primaries, the primary season. I fought very hard for Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz was my guy. And Ted Cruz had a lot of success. He won 10 primary or primary states. And I was opposed to Donald Trump as being the Republican nominee. But in the time that followed that, both the election and in the Trump presidency, looking back on it, it came to my realization. And smart people are willing to change their opinions, by the way, based on changing circumstances. It became very clear to me that there is nobody else that was on that Republican stage, including my guy, Ted Cruz, that could have beaten Hillary Clinton. You understand that? Without Donald Trump, we would have had 4 years of Hillary Clinton, and she would be being sworn in 14 days from now for another 4 years, which would mean literally 16 years of uninterrupted leftist power. 8 of Obama and 8 of Hillary Clinton. The only person who stopped that is Donald Trump. He's the only one who could have. Marco Rubio couldn't have beaten Hillary Clinton. Ted Cruz couldn't have beaten Hillary Clinton as much as I wanted to believe he could have. Who else? Ben Carson couldn't have beaten Hillary Clinton. Lindsey Graham, nobody else that was on that stage. Chris Christie, go back and look at the people. None of them are going to beat Hillary Clinton. The only person who stopped us and saved us from Hillary Clinton and a third straight term of Obama politics on steroids was the outsider. Donald J. Trump came in and rescued the party and, quite frankly, the country. We would be right now in a far worse place after 12 straight years of Obama-Clinton style of politics and leadership and quite frankly, devastation of both our economy and our military. We would be in a far worse place now had we not elected Donald J. Trump. Is it bad now that we have to deal with what is incoming? Yes. Would it be worse if we were headed into the second term of Hillary Clinton? Far worse. So I want to share that with my friend, and I want to share that with everybody else who may be thinking that Donald Trump is to blame for this. We owe him a debt of thanks. We'll be right back. All right, 10:36. We continue on this Wednesday, the morning after the morning of, the morning after the disaster in Georgia, the morning of the fight in Congress and in Washington, D.C., that is going to be held today. We talked to Tom Zawistowski. If you missed that conversation, Tom is fired up, said Mike Pence needs to do whatever is necessary. And it reminds me, it's a sports acronym. That's what it takes to win, right? W-I-N, win, means whatever is necessary. And that is exactly what he and others are calling for Mike Pence and the members of the Republican Senate and even those from a minority point of view, you know, as the minority party in the House, but for them to do that as well. Whatever is necessary to try to protect and preserve this republic. I'm going to go right back to your phone calls, Anna. Before I do, I would be remiss if I did not talk about another big story today. I knew this was going to be all Georgia and all electoral certification fight, but yesterday, and I wonder if this was done because of, you know, if this timing was chosen because of what's going on today, so that it would get a little bit less coverage and perhaps lead to less violence in response to it. I'm talking about the announcement yesterday evening that there would be no criminal charges filed in Kenosha, Wisconsin against the police officer who shot Jacob Blake, which touched off more of the riots. I mean, there were riots all over the country over the George Floyd thing, over this thing, that thing, or the other thing. But the Kenosha, Wisconsin one, which of course led to the very highly publicized incident involving Kyle Rittenhouse as well, was over Jacob Blake being shot in an altercation with police. Kenosha police officer Rustin Shesky will not be charged in that shooting. I wonder if they released this yesterday because, again, everybody's focused on the Georgia election, the runoff yesterday, and the ramp up to today's Capitol Hill fight and, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in D.C. Maybe they did that so this kind of, you know, got lost in the news cycle somewhat. And if so, that's smart. Kenosha District Attorney Michael Gravely announced, or Gravely perhaps, announced during his Tuesday press conference that after weeks of studying the investigation into the shooting by Wisconsin Department of Justice Division of Criminal Investigation and in a review by an independent use of force consultant, he does not believe charges against the police officer are warranted. Shesky, according to the Kenosha News, who has to point this out, is white, lowercase, shot Blake, a black, uppercase, capitalized man, because thank you, AP style, on August 23rd after being called for a domestic disturbance with the mother of Blake's children. The shooting, captured on video by a bystander and shared worldwide on social media, led to widespread protests because, of course, it had to, right? After all, a white cop shot a black suspect. Never mind the fact that the black suspect was tased not once but twice in order to get him to comply, which he would not do with police officers. The tasers had no effect on him. Remember, the tasers are the non-lethal force that is, first tried. Did not work. And Blake, armed with a knife, continued to refuse police officers' orders as he reached into his car and then turned back around. And Officer Shesky was not about to wait to see what he was turning back around with. He was not about to wait to either get stabbed or shot, so he shot him first. I want to emphasize, said the prosecutor, that this case has to be laser focused on what a jury trial would look like. Everyone in the world has seen this on their computer screen and has judged the case from there. But as a professional, I'm called upon on how to try this case in a real courtroom. And in a real courtroom, Gravely said he had to weigh several factors, most of all determine what could be proven in court. He said he did not feel he could prove Chesky did not have the privilege of self-defense in his decision to shoot Blake. Chesky and two other officers, again, were called to the woman's home after she called 911 on her, or on him, saying Blake had her car keys, was attempting to leave, and that he was not supposed to be at her home. Police knew when they arrived there was a felony warrant for his arrest after a previous incident involving the same woman. They attempted to arrest Blake when they arrived on the scene, but he immediately resisted. At that point, it was on, said Noble Ray, the former Madison police chief brought on as an independent use of force expert. He said the time between when the police arrived and when the shots were fired was just over 1 minute. Officers attempted to take Blake to the ground, used tasers and other measures to try to take him into custody. Ray said Blake grabbed a knife that he had at some point dropped on the ground. And according to Ray, the use of force expert, the video shows police, their guns drawn, following Blake at a distance after he picked up the knife as he walks around the SUV and attempts to get inside. Blake's children were in the vehicle. As soon as Mr. Blake got to the vehicle, in the officer's mind, he's thinking you cannot let him leave with children in the car. This is the stuff Amber Alerts are made of. Knife in hand, Blake began to twist his body toward the officer, and that is when Chesky fired his weapon several times, striking him four times in his back, three times in his side. Gravely said in the video, the view of whether Blake is turning toward police is blocked by the vehicle's door and the second officer. Bottom line here is, this was an absolutely textbook justifiable shoot that led to violence only because Jacob Blake is black. And the narrative in the media today is if a black man is shot by police, it's racism. That's the only reason this is a discussion. If Jacob Blake was white, this was never a news story, much less something that people would riot over. And how do we know what I'm saying right now to be the truth? The fact that, what are we, 6 months later, from since this, or 5 months later, since this August occurrence? 5 months later, the media is still trying to gin up the racist angle and trying to gin up anger against the police by claiming that Jacob Blake was unarmed. Literally. The Washington Post yesterday tweeted the decision on the non-charging of the officer and said that this officer shot an unarmed Jacob Blake. That is the Washington Post. Other media members repeated that this was a white cop shooting an unarmed black man. By the way, Blake wasn't killed. He was wounded, obviously, seriously, and is paralyzed. Terrible outcome. But the only person responsible for Jacob Blake's paralysis right now is Jacob Blake. It's just that simple. So they're calling him an unarmed suspect shot by a white police officer. It is just, it's inconceivable. It's unimaginable. Washington Post tweet, quote, police officers won't be charged in shooting of Jacob Blake, an unarmed black man who was shot seven times in the back in Kenosha, Wisconsin. They're trying to get riots restarted. They're trying. Keith Boykin, Kenosha police officer Rustin Chesky shoots unarmed black man Jacob Blake seven times in the back and faces no charges. They want more violence. They want more riots. They want more racial reckoning. Rabia Oshadri, another blue check liberal media member, he was unarmed, shot in front of his three kids. No, he was not unarmed. He was armed, and he himself made the decision to ignore police commands, to resist police, to fight off the tasers, to pick up the knife, to turn toward the cops. There is one person responsible for Jacob Blake's shooting and paralysis. That one person is Jacob Blake. So I wanted to get that story in there today, too, because it's obviously very important. It kind of pales in comparison to where we are with the Georgia and the election issues, but that story is enormous, and it needs to be addressed. Todd is in Ward 1 on AM 1420, The Answer. Hey, Todd, go right ahead.
Bob, I called as a grateful Georgia registered voter, but I want to respond to something that you said earlier about about Trump being elected and stopping Clinton from being elected. Had the Republican Party done what they were supposed to do, which was get behind Jeb Bush, who was going to be a middle-of-the-road Republican. He wasn't going to be running the gambit with a bunch of gambit's the wrong word. He wouldn't have been running his campaign with a bunch of sensationalism attached to it, you know, and not been so inclined to go with Trump, who actually won on sensationalism. Not only would they have been president, he'd be president now because he's the middle of the road. The only comeback they would have had against Jeb Bush was talking that dumb stuff about he's part of a regime. We've already had a Bush. Well, the comeback to that.
Jeb Bush would have gotten slaughtered. Jeb Bush would have gotten slaughtered by Hillary Clinton, Todd. He would have gotten slaughtered. He was the most uninspiring, unimaginative, I won't say unqualified. He was a governor, but a candidate that I can imagine. There's a reason why he failed. Listen though, but Todd, Jeb Bush didn't lose because the Republican establishment rallied around Donald Trump. Jeb Bush lost to everybody. He polled in those primaries behind Carson, behind Carly Fiorina, behind Lindsey Graham, behind Donald Trump, behind Ted Cruz. It's not like they said, we'll choose the sensationalistic Trump over the steady middle-of-the-road Bush. Bush couldn't beat the rest of the Republicans in the field. He was never going to beat Hillary Clinton.
It was the sensationalism that made him a lesser candidate in the views of the shallow thinking public that weren't really looking at the depth of those individual candidates. He was an efficient governor. Now I'm not, this is coming from somebody that's not a Republican. Okay. He was an efficient governor.
Yeah, I know
governor.
That, but I just fundamentally disagree with you on this. He was a terrible candidate and it showed. Like I said, it's not like Donald Trump rose immediately to the top of the pledge class, if you will, in that field. I mean, there was a fight there for a long time. Jeb Bush had an opportunity to make headway against the other middle of the road Republicans. And there were a lot of middle of the road Republicans like him. Nobody liked him. And so I don't, and then once he was eliminated, and it was early, once he was eliminated, like I said before, as much as I love Ted Cruz, I don't think Ted Cruz could have beaten Hillary Clinton. He would not have had enough widespread appeal to win. You know what? How did Donald Trump win that narrow victory? He broke the blue wall. I don't think. But whatever you want to call it, it worked enough to win the Wisconsin, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan blue wall that was so extraordinarily important. I don't think Ted Cruz does that. I don't think Marco Rubio does that. I don't think anybody else would have been able to win those states other than the sensationalist, if you want to call him that, Donald Trump. And because he was there and because he did that, he saved us from 4 years. Well, I think Hillary would be about to be re-inaugurated for 8 years of a Hillary presidency on top of 8 years of an Obama presidency. We owe him a debt for that. What else you got?
You're not thinking that through, but I'm going to let it go because this is something we can't prove or disprove at this point. So I'm going to let that go.
That's true.
The best two candidates won the senatorial race in Georgia. I'm grateful for this. Now they had an opportunity to do what they should have been doing all along in Georgia, which is get on top of a handful of things. One, there's like at least 4 military bases, and the 7th District for the Coast Guard is down there in Georgia. And those enlisted soldiers need more money. So there needs to be a push for that, for sure. Kelly Loeffler was sitting on a commission.
Wait. You're telling me that Communist Raphael... Chinese Communist Party supported John Ossoff. You're telling me that these two new Democrat senators are going to buck the trend of the rest of the Democrats in Washington that cut funding to our military, and they're actually going to bring more funding to military bases in Georgia? When did Democrats start funding the military? The last two Democrat presidents took turns slashing and burning our military budget in order to try to balance the budget. It was destroyed by Bill Clinton, rebuilt by George Bush, redestroyed by Barack Obama, and rebuilt by Donald Trump. And Todd, you're calling me to tell me that Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff are going to be the Democrats that fund the military bases in Georgia? Todd, what happened to you, man? What happened to your reason? What happened to your logic?
Raphael's been a middle-of-the-road type Democrat, minded person, at least since he was 21 when he was sitting at Morehouse with me. He has not changed in his thinking. And as a
part You went to college with him?
I graduated from Morehouse College.
Now, with Raphael Warnock?
Nah, he's a little bit ahead of me. But,
Okay, I thought you said he sat there with you. But hold on. Forget about Kelly Loeffler. Stick on Raphael Warnock when you tell me that he's not a communist. You have listened to the man's speech, have you not?
Define communist for the listening public. Let's not play around with the word. Define communist for the listening public.
Well, first of all, all you need to do when it comes to Raphael Warnock is listen to him praise communists. Praise Cuba, for crying out loud. When you listen to a guy, you don't have to know everything about a man's ideology other than whom does he support. You know, I've had a conversation yesterday about a local judge who is a strong supporter of Che Guevara and Fidel Castro, who is trying to tell people he's not a communist. He's got a poster of Che Guevara, or did when he was a judge, in his judge's chambers. I don't need to have a long, drawn-out conversation with you about your economic theory or your economic or social ideology to know that if you praise communists, ergo, you are a communist. You're going to tell me that Raphael Warnock, with all of his, he's further to the left than maybe Kamala Harris, who's further to the left of Bernie Sanders.
Not even close. Not even close. And I mean,
this is a guy who also, by the way, says that he's a minister, or a pastor, if you will, that believes in Christianity and the Bible and Jesus Christ, and yet supports abortion on demand through any time of a woman's pregnancy, and says that's a Christian principle to have. Todd, listen, let me
tell you about this commission I'd like to see them move to that Kelly Loeffler has been on, that I thought Kelly Loeffler was doing a reasonably good job at, okay?
I've only got like 30 seconds. I'm already late for my break here. Go ahead.
Okay,
spend 30 seconds on Kelly Loeffler.
Whatever you think about Loeffler or Warnock, they're both now, going to be a former senator, he's going to be a new senator, but both from the state of Georgia. And that committee that she worked on, it was health, education, labor, and retirement committee, which oversees the affairs of the pension guarantee benefit protection corporation, is a good one, and I'd like to see him move right into that slot, because I've paid attention to some of the work that she's done here. Kelly Loeffler's been okay with that. So time's up.
She's been okay. But listen, and thank you for the call. And we'll talk and argue about Raphael Warnock another time. I think there's a lot of favoritism going on here because he's a fellow alum, a fellow Morehouse alum. I got no problem where anybody went to college, but I will tell you this. I will listen to a man's speech. I will look at what he stands for, and I will indeed tell you what he is by his own words. Sometimes when people tell you what they are, you got to believe them. And what Raphael Warnock is a communist. We'll be right back.
Everybody knows me now.
Okay, 10:56, time for just a couple more phone calls here. I wish I had more time to play audio of Raphael Warnock praising Fidel Castro and comparing Castro to the United States of America, the nation that he wants to represent now in the United States Senate. We'll do that tomorrow, I guess, on tomorrow's program. I just don't have time for it now, but I wanted to respond to Todd with that audio. We'll go to Rick instead. Rick is in Broadview Heights on AM 1420 The Answer. Rick, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Bob. I want to first off thank you for your efforts in telling the truth when so many outlets basically just do propaganda.
Thank you.
My comment is simply this. I believe as a mathematician that there's been all kinds of fraud in this election, but I read a couple of books by Jonathan Kahn called The Harbinger and The Harbinger 2, and I really believe that people really ought to look at those books because they explain why things are happening in the world the way that they are. And ultimately, I think we need to trust in God a lot more than we trust in government, regardless who's in charge. And that's all I had.
Well, I thank you, Rick, for the phone call. I certainly concur. Right now, what else do we have? Right? Other than prayer, what else do we have? I got nothing else to trust in. I can't trust in the politicians to lead us. I can't trust in the voters to do the right thing. I can't trust if the voters do the right thing that the vote counters will allow that will to be you know, enforced. What else do we have? I agree with you. Pray. Trust in God. But as I said prior to the Georgia elections yesterday, God isn't going to just open the clouds, reach down, and snap his fingers and make something happen. God is going to expect us to do what needs to be done on our own. We have to force the change. We have to enforce the freedom that he gave to all of us. We have to fight for it. And that means we have to oust people who are the fraudsters, the felonious vote counters. I mean, and the hucksters who sell us on those things. We have to fight for it, man. And I'll tell you what, I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to fight because, like I said, we have to put our trust in God. Like the caller said, we have to put our trust in God. But God expects us to do our part. Are you ready for that? Thanks for being a part of the show today. Thanks to Tom Z for coming on. We'll talk to you tomorrow on AM 1420, The Answer. Be well.